Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
So on this edition of Into the Fray, I have on with me L. Douglas Hogan. He is a veteran of the Marine Corps, a law enforcement officer, and he is an author of 8 dystopian fiction works, 1 Western fiction, 2 nonfiction, and is a contributing author on 3 more fictional works. But I think probably the biggest thing for me to say is that he is the fantastic cover designer for Beyond the Fray Publishing. Doug, welcome on to the show.
Thank you, Shannon. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, so, I mean, you have all kinds of interests. You have an interesting job that we were just speaking about, which you're still basically in law enforcement, right? In 2 different capacities. And obviously, you love apocalyptic stuff, post-apocalyptic stuff, dystopian. But today we're actually going to be discussing the big hairy guy. Is that something that's been on your radar for a long time?
Ever since I was a child, there was some incidents that happened in my uncle's life and kind of piqued an interest. And just through the years, that has been something that's been on my life, right, like on my mind. And until recently, yes, I recently had an experience of my own, but I've always had an interest for Bigfoot, the big hairy guy. And I love stopping it. I can be flipping through the channels, you know, just looking for something to watch. And as soon as I get to something that's Bigfoot related, I kind of stop and I watch it. I'm interested. I want to know everything that I can.
I saw you post something about hiking the Appalachian Trail. Is that something that you're gearing up to do, or have you already done a portion of that? What's going on there?
Well, I work, like I told you, I was telling you before the podcast, I work at Maximum Security Mental Health Facility in Illinois. It's the only kind in the state. And as far as I know, very few of them in the United States. So I do that full time, but when I'm not working, I like to go out and do outdoorsy stuff. I'm an avid outdoorsman. I love camping. I love hiking. Every March and October in particular, I head out west, and out east, and I jump on the Appalachian Trail. And it's a 2,100 plus mile, you know, trail that runs from Georgia to Maine. And I go out there sometimes twice. I go at least a minimum of March and October, but sometimes I'll throw on another visit in either March or October and hit it 3 times that year. But yeah, I do. I go out there frequently and I hike sections of it. And I never hike the same section. I always go back and hike a new section. And my goal is eventually to hike the entire Appalachian Trail.
And how long is that supposed to take?
If you do it like if you go straight on, like if you like through hike it, you're looking anywhere an average of 4 to 6 months.
And because I was just talking to somebody about rock climbing and rappelling and how you wouldn't find me doing any of that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Is there any parts of the trail that isn't just like a walk, like a hiking trail, walking trail? What's the most difficult part of the Appalachian Trail?
You're going to find, depending on who you interview that's hiked sections of the Appalachian Trail, that there's going to be different sections that are more difficult for some people. For me, I haven't got far enough north to see some places you have to crouch to go through some caves or rocks that are kind of low hanging. You know, you just kind of go underneath them. I'm 6'5". So that would be a difficult thing for me. It's easier for me to climb, but there are some spots on the Appalachian Trail where, and it's well-maintained. It's not like you have to, there's rappel, you know, ropes and stuff like that. You don't have to take your own rock climbing gear. Everything is well-maintained, but there are some sections where you have to duck real low or maybe take your pack off and kind of crouch down and walk through tight quarters. There's other sections where you have to climb like maybe a rhubarb ladder where the trail maintainers have put like a rhubarb ladder into a cliff face where you just climb up it. You might have to jump a small gap, you know, to get across. There's other sections of the trail that are so steep that you can literally reach out and touch the trail with your hands as you're climbing up.
Yeah, the rappelling stuff, I think I'd be like,
I don't know. I mean, rappelling is, are you afraid of heights?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that because I live out here near, Red Rock Canyon isn't far. And even Alex Hanold, the free solo guy, goes out there and he's on a whole nother level anyway. He doesn't even strap in. But I've read too many reports of people falling and I'm clumsy anyway. And I'm like, I don't think I'd be very good at that.
Yeah, there's definitely I was in the Marines and we did a lot of that in the infantry. We did a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Particularly when we went to Bridgeport, California, did a lot of mountain rappelling and stuff like that. And if you're trained enough, if you've done it enough, you kind of are able to at least conquer. Not that it goes away completely, but at least conquer it and be able to control it. So, right. you know what you're doing. And there are ways to rappel without carabiners. And it all, depends on the way you latch yourself in with the knots.
Well, maybe I just need to join the Marine Corps and get over that fear. That and spiders, but I don't think anyone's getting me over my fear of spiders. So I'm going to stay. Yeah. I'm going to stay in that camp of no spiders for Shannon. Yeah.
You might be beyond the range of a recruit too. I think they got a cut off. And
what are you trying to say, Doug?
You're not near. I think the cutoff is like 25 or something like
that.
Oh,
I've just barely missed it. What are you saying?
Yeah, I know you did. I know you're 26 ish. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're in Illinois. Obviously, you go outdoors a lot. You do your thing. And I know that we're going to, now I'm assuming that we can share at least the county because you did file a BFRO report, I should say, about your incident. But why don't we just go ahead and jump into this thing that happened October of last year, actually.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. It was October 10th of, in the county. You said, is it okay for me to share the county?
Yeah, absolutely. I was saying, however, detailed you want to get on that, it's up to you.
Okay, so it was Jackson County, Illinois, and it was Giant City State Park, and I had never been there before. It was like I live in a very great part of the United States where, Illinois is kind of, where I live in particular, it's real close to Missouri, so there's a lot of places for me to go hiking in my area, but I'd never been to Giant City State Park to hike any of their trails, and I understood that they had a lot of trails there, and I wanted to go and do something. I had two hikes planned in October, early October. I was going to hike, was going to be a 17-mile hike in Giant City State Park and called the Red Cedar Trail. And the latter one was going to be at the end of October, which I did. It was a section on the Appalachian Trail. But on October 10th, me, my wife, and a female friend of mine that I work with, we decided to go to Giant City. Now, my wife had just had a double mastectomy and she, had not exercised in a while. And this was like, this was for her. She wanted to go on this trip with me to get ready for the hike during the end of the month on the Appalachian Trail. So she's with me and my friend, and we're hiking, getting ready to. So we show up at this place. It's supposed to be a 17-mile loop, and in the middle of this 17-mile loop was a primitive campsite. We didn't know anything about it. I was doing a bunch of homework because I always look up videos and websites. I go and do my own homework. I look at the reviews. I look at the complaints, the pros, the cons. I look at everything I can before I go out, so I'm properly prepared before I hit the trail. I'm no amateur hiker. I got a $300 backpack and a $600 tent. I'm only throwing that out there because I do this. I wouldn't say professionally, because I would incline that I'm doing it for money. I do this for fun. All right. It's what I love doing. So I'm used to the woods. I'm used to the sounds of the woods. I know what's out there when it comes to what's normal and what's, we'll say, paranormal. But we were making this, we had this decision to go out there to the woods and to this Red Cedar Trail and to hike it together. And we were going to leave in the early afternoon. And it was about an hour and a half drive to get there. The plan was to hike out half of the trail, get halfway, and then camp at the primitive campsite, and then wake up the next morning and come back. That was the plan. So to get there before dark, you know, to the primitive campsite was the primary goal of the first day. But we got out there, and I had read the reviews that the trail was not well marked. A lot of people were complaining that it was poorly maintained, it was poorly marked, and we went out there and started hiking. And I can't tell you how many times we got misplaced. We ended up walking the first day 2 miles longer than we were supposed to because the trail was so poorly maintained. It crossed paths with horseback trails, and or whenever the trails intersected with another trail, sometimes they intersected itself. It wasn't marked well enough, so you would stay on the correct position you're supposed to be heading towards. So we ended up backtracking accidentally. That's how badly it was marked. And so we got to the primitive campsite halfway through in the evening hours, like it was getting dark. And so we started setting up our tents. My wife set up her tent. Sleeping arrangements. I slept in a hammock in a cocoon with a tarp over the top of me on that particular trip. So I set mine up. My friend set hers up, and my wife set up her tent. Okay. So, and then we sat down and we started walking around looking for wood because there was a little burn pit there. We wanted to start a fire, but it had been raining the previous couple of days. And so the wood was not quite dry. It was a little wet in the middle. We had a little hard time starting it, but we finally got the fire started. And we collected as much wood as we can. And we kind of set that by, and we maintained it best we could for a while. And we decided that we wanted to call it a night and go to bed after we ate. So we ate, we went to bed. And it takes me a little bit to fall asleep. I grow accustomed to the sounds of the woods. I do it regularly. Every time I go out on any kind of extended hike or camping trip, I like to listen to the sounds a little bit before I fall asleep. And then I peek out once in a while to see where the fire's at, and the fire's getting dimmer and dimmer and dimmer. And before long, it turns into just like an ember burn. You know, just the flames are gone, but you got the golden glow. And then it went out completely, and then it was pitch black. I mean, the woods were so incredibly dense that there was no light. We couldn't see anything, nothing. I couldn't see if I was to look out, couldn't see my wife's tent, couldn't see, you know, my friend's hammock set up where she was at. She was sleeping in a hammock and a tarp just as I was. It was pitch black. So we're sleeping there. As I've said a couple times already, I'm used to the sounds of the woods. And I'm used to things falling from trees and hitting my tarp, sliding down my tarp and rolling off onto the ground. But something that night hit my tarp hard, and it startled me awake. And whatever hit my tarp didn't slide down the side of my tarp and hit the ground. It's not like something fell from a tree. It's something hit it, and that was the end of it. Could it have been a hoot owl? Possibly. I don't know of any nighttime scavenger that would fly into an object I'm not necessarily a critic. I consider myself very open-minded. But what happened next was weird because I take with me when I hike any distance, a small self-defense firearm, which I had on my chest, and I'm sleeping there with this, you know, sidearm on my chest. And I am instantly startled awake by this huge slap sound, and I can't move. And it's not because I didn't want to, it's because there was like some kind of a psychology. There is some kind of psychology behind it. I wasn't struggling, trying to move. It's like I was afraid to move. And I've never done that before, because of all my trips, of all my hiking excursions, all my camping, you know, experiences, I've never felt this before. Anytime I hear a strange sound in the woods or in my camp, I unzip and I look out and I lift up my tarp and I look out and see what's in my area. And I couldn't. And my heart was pounding. And my ears were, I could feel my ears heating up with blood. And I felt it's a constant, the fight or flight response, which I'm sure you're familiar with. I was feeling that, but I couldn't fight and I couldn't flight. That was the only problem. I felt like I was almost like a terrified in position. I sat there afraid to move for some time. And my heart stopped beating. I would say about 5 minutes or so it took for me to calm down. And I'm like, okay, well, whatever that was, it's not doing it anymore. Like, it's not happening again. So I'm going to go back to sleep. And I finally went back to sleep. And the next morning, when I wake up, I start rustling around and I hear my wife's tent, you know, she's rustling around. And my friend, I hear, you know, she's kind of rustling around in her sleeping arrangement. And we all get up about the same time and we're all standing in a triangle looking at each other, because my wife's tent was like on the north side of the camp and my friend was on the at a diagonal angle opposite of me. And then I was, you know, across from her. And we're all just standing there kind of looking at each other. And I broke the silence first. I said, something happened last night. Something slapped my tent. I don't know what it was. And my wife, who was in the tent, says, dude, something with two legs was walking around my tent last night. And I said, what do you mean? She says, I don't know. What I mean, I just know it had two legs and I was walking around my tent. I said, you sure it wasn't a deer or something like that? She says, no, I know what a deer sounds like. It had two legs. And then my friend, she said the same thing. I would say her name, except I haven't had her permission to say it. She says, that happened to me too. And we looked at her. What do you mean it happened to you? Something snooped around my tent last night and I was afraid to move. Then my wife said, I was afraid to move too. Because when you're in a tent or in, like I am, a cocoon, and you unzip yourself and you feel like something intelligent is on the outside of your tent, you know that you've lost the element of surprise. You hear zzz, you know, and that tells to whoever or whatever is outside of your tent or your sleeping arrangement that somebody's coming out, you know. So, but my wife was afraid, and she's got not one, but she had two zippers on her tent. So she would have been zzz, zzz. She was afraid to. She admitted that she was even afraid to move, similar to my experience. I told her she was afraid to move. My friend said the same thing. I didn't want to move. I couldn't move. I felt like, go away, whatever it is, just don't sit still and it'll go away. And whatever it was, walked out. So it went, started in the north side of the camp, walked, this is how we, the timeline, walked to my wife's tent, snooped around a bipedal creature, she described it, walked over to my friend's tent, snooped around her tent, a bipedal creature that she acknowledged, then walk over to mine and slapped it. And then it walked out the south side of the camp. By this time, I'm asleep, but my wife and my friend hears a hoot. And it sounded pretty typical to what I understand. The big hairy guy in some areas, it's reported to hoot. It started out like a low guttural siren, and it started out real low, and then it raised, and then it cut off, and then it gave two more hoots, and it did that 10 minutes apart. Now we're talking probably a couple hundred yards on the south side of our campsite now, deep in the woods. So I'm going to try to explain, imitate this the way my wife explained it to me. I was deep asleep when this hoot happened. I didn't hear it, but it was like a, for a while, then it cut off and it went, hoo, 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 like that. And then 10 minutes later, it did the exact same thing. And then there was nothing.
So that sounds like a pretty messed up owl sound. Like it was kind of sort of maybe at one point trying to imitate an owl, but the girls are going, that's no owl.
Well, exactly. My wife goes with me on a lot of hikes. She's been with me once on the Appalachian Trail and a couple times out on hikes, but she's camped with me a whole bunch. And she's familiar with the sounds. You know, she grew up on a farmland also. So she's familiar with the sounds of the creatures we have in our area, as is my friend. She's very avid. She does a lot of hiking, a lot of camping, and so is she. But the sound that they communicated, I can't remember if my friend heard the sound or not, but the sound they communicated to me is nothing that we have in our area. The hoo-hoo sound probably could have been explained away, but not the siren sound. I mean, and it came together both times. So you had the long siren sound and then the hoot hoot. And then 10 minutes later, you had the long siren sound and the hoot hoot. That tells me that that's like a package deal that happened twice.
Right.
One creature made those sounds. So we're standing there that morning, you know, and we're talking in exuberation about, you know, we're kind of elated about how we experienced something like that. And, none of us smelled anything because I asked if they smelled something, and the BFRO guy called me, investigator called me, and he was asking me a lot of questions. He asked me to see, did you smell anything? I didn't smell anything, but I was also wrapped in a cocoon, which is a giant, like a 9-foot banana with a zipper hanging between trees, right? So I can't smell anything in my arrangement. And then also I had a tarp, you know, in the shape of a tent over me. My wife was in a tent. She didn't smell anything. And my friend was wrapped up head to toe in a sleeping bag, similar to what I was laying, but she was in just a sleeping bag with a tarp over her. She didn't smell anything. I got up the next morning and I'm walking around their area. I'm walking around my area. I'm trying to find footprints. Keep in mind that it had been raining the previous couple of days and all the fall leaves in October were kind of already flat to the ground. And I couldn't, it's not like there was nothing muddy. It was all grass and leaves, piles of leaves. So trying to get a footprint or any kind of evidence that anything had bipedal had walked through our area was proving extremely difficult. I also, there was walnut trees. I want to throw this out there for critics. And I also told the Bigfoot research organization investigator that there was walnut trees. But as I said before, I'm extremely experienced in things falling out of trees and hitting my tarp. That wasn't the case this time. And I feel I'm experienced enough and solid enough in my experience to know when something falls on my tarp, gravity's going to carry it to the ground. And that just didn't happen. Not only that, but it kind of mixed together with the experience that my wife had, individual experiences that my wife had and my friend had together about the same time frame.
Now, did the ladies get any sleep at all? So you didn't hear the siren sound or the hoot sounds, but they heard it both times, right?
Yes.
Did they sleep the rest of the night?
It was a restless kind of a light sleep. I went back to sleep, of course. I'm generally a heavy sleeper. There was a time in my life where I was a light sleeper, and something like that would have woke me up. But when I hike, I think it's the exhaustion. I get tired. I sleep well.
Mm-hmm.
And they slept, but it was a light sleep because of that entire experience. When you know that something's in your area and you're afraid to look out into the, you know, your campsite to see what it is, I mean that can leave a mark.
Yeah, the fact that all three of you had that very same feeling, that instinct as far as I just have to be still and quiet, like that it none of you had the instinct to go, what in the world is that? Let me get up and check. It was the same all the way across the board.
Yeah, and also, I want to make sure your listeners understand, I've been a police officer for 10 years. I've worked in a maximum security environment in a mental health facility for 22 and a half years. So I was in the Marines for four. There's not a lot. I'm not afraid of people. My culture is one of violence. I'm not saying I enjoy violence, but that's my culture. I'm an experienced in violence, and I'm just not afraid. And every time I hear something, I inspect it, I investigate it. But this time something was different, and I don't know the psychology of it. I don't know why I couldn't. All I know is I felt like something was different, like it was supernatural, like it was paranormal. I felt like this is something that I couldn't manage. There's nothing in my scientific mind that tells me that something that can hit my tarp, and that's, you know, and not roll off. Something's out there, and it defies logic. It defies reasoning. Something's out there that's paranormal. And these are the things that's racing through my mind as I'm laying there with my eyes open and this pistol in my chest. You know, I couldn't move. I couldn't bring myself to unzip. I was afraid to let whatever was outside of my sleeping arrangement know that I was awake and moving around. My wife thinks that because sometimes I snore, that maybe I was snoring. Maybe we even thought about, tossed around some ideas that maybe because I was the only guy in the camp, you know, that's why I received the only aggression, you know, the only aggressive response. It could have been the snoring. It could have been, I don't know, masculine pheromones. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever it was, it snooped around their individual sleeping range, left them alone, came over and slapped mine. It was odd, and I can't explain it, and I don't know why I couldn't react.
Doug, what are the thoughts on, and this is, all of it's just conjecture, of course, but on the fact that maybe whatever the ladies heard walking around was actually still in camp, but there was the sounds off in the woods from maybe a second creature, or did they hear that one walking off and then the sound started?
They each heard that it was snooping around their area and then walked off. So my wife communicated to me that it walked around her tent, kind of snooped around is the word she used, and then it walked off. And then my friend heard the same thing. She says it walked around her sleeping arrangement and then walked off.
Okay.
I don't know, because when I think about this, what happened, I never heard it walk off. So I don't know if it slept my tent and waited for a response, didn't leave until I was asleep, because my wife said, you know, that it had walked off. And then a few minutes later, you know, the hoot and howling started on the south side of where we were at, out into the woods. So all I know is it wasn't there when we went to bed, and it wasn't there when we woke up.
Is this a pretty, and it sounds like it, because you were able to do quite a bit of research, is this a pretty busy area then? Like, even that specific campsite, it's got the burn pit. Yes, it's primitive, but it sounds like it's often visited.
There, I would like to say yes, but I only saw three people on that trail the entire, it takes a long time to hike 19 miles. So yeah, we ended up hiking 19 miles when the whole thing was done, but we only saw three people. And we saw them very early on foot with no backpacks. So they were not hikers like we were. They were probably just kind of, and it was early on, like where there was some places where they could have parked a vehicle close to a highway or something like that and come in, you know, and was just kind of walking around. And then when they were done, they left. I don't know what they were doing out there. They were walking opposite us. And so they walked opposite of us. We were heading, I can't remember, I want to say, hold on, I'm thinking in my head here. We were hiking counterclockwise on the Red Cedar Trail, and they were coming clockwise. We were counterclockwise, they were clockwise early on, and there was nothing after that. Because of the poor markings, because I always try as an investigator myself, being a police officer, I'm also an investigator. I've taken investigative courses and stuff. I know how to look for evidence, collect evidence, and try to be non-biased in building a case. There was no way that any person could have been out there without lights at 2 or 3 in the morning when this thing happened, this event happened, because it was so dark. Even with lighting, we had a difficult time navigating this trail in the daylight with poor markings, let alone for somebody to navigate it at night with no lights.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Right. And lighting is one thing that you're going to see. Like my wife would have saw that in her tent through her tent wall. I wouldn't have seen it through my hammock because it's deep. It's heavily insulated. Mm-hmm. And my friend wouldn't have saw it through her sleeping bag because it's insulated. But she saw no light and she was looking and couldn't. It was pitch black outside. Saw no lights. Nobody could have navigated that in the dark. It just wasn't possible. The trail was poorly maintained and poorly marked.
I know what it was, Doug. It was Buffalo Bill with his night vision goggles. That explains everything.
Puts the lotion on his skin or it gets the hose again.
No, that's a really good point to point out just how very dark it would be. And if a person was out there somehow, they'd be bonking into things. And let's face it, we're pretty damn noisy in the woods as it is. And if you add complete darkness to it, they would not be able to navigate so well. So that is a very, very good point. Now, what does your wife say about all this? Like, what does she think about Bigfoot in general and specifically, of course, you guys' experience out there?
Well, first of all, neither one of us deny the existence of Bigfoot. We're curious. We want to know. There's been we agree on this. In our estimations, there's been too many encounters to completely dismiss the existence of the big guy. Have we seen him? No, but we had a Class B experience. You know, as a child, my uncle had a Class A experience. These things this has been kind of like a part of me inside for some time. We've been married for 28 years now, so we're fairly open with each other. We both believe that he exists. We would like an experience deeper than what we had, but at the same time, I don't want to feel like I'm not in control. That's my thing. I'm the supervisor at this hospital where I work, and I've been doing that for almost 7 years. Yeah, it's been 7 years now. So I run a maximum security mental health facility. And also, like I said, I've got 10 years of police experience. Not having any control is a weird sensation to me. Because I feel like I do, and I have most of my working life, but in that situation, to be place myself on purpose, you know, I would love to go on an expedition or something like that. But the frightening thing about losing, it's very much real to me, is losing that sense of control. My wife believes in it. She's eager to find out, you know, if it's true or not. So she's very excited that we had this experience, but she wants another one, a meaningful one. That's her thoughts on it.
Do you wish that somehow you could go back and completely fight that feeling to not open your hammock and find a flashlight somehow and have the time to see what it was outside there. Do you wish that you would have actually had that Class A sighting like your uncle did?
Yes, definitely. I actually have a flashlight. I also, there's two things I sleep with when I go on these camping and hiking trips. I have a flashlight that I keep. There's a pocket on the inside of my cocoon, and there's a flashlight in there. And then I always hike with my self-protection, and I sleep with it, you know, in a little pistol sheath, so I don't actually pull the trigger or anything like that. But those are two things I sleep with. If I could go back, and if I could somehow have the control, my control back, and be able to look out, would I? Being a person, I've done security my entire life, and I still believe that if I was to unzip that zipper, that if there was something, let's say that's aggressive, because I don't know, I always have to err on the side of caution and assume that there's going to be aggression waiting for me on the other side. I probably would not. If I heard it in a distance, would I unzip it and look out? I definitely would, but not when it's slapping my tarp and it's standing right on top of me. And that could have been the psychology of it. There's something I felt that was supernatural, paranormal, standing over me. And if I was to unzip and make that noise, I would give up my element of surprise and I could potentially be a victim. I don't know. And so I do want the experience, but at the same time, I would like to see him. I do want a Class A, for sure want a Class A, but I don't want to stick my head out and see him hovering over the top of me.
Yeah.
I don't know what the outcome would be.
No, go ahead. You'd rather live.
I'd rather live and tell the story. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I don't know, you know, I've watched the videos of the Russian Yeti, and there's no, all that's left is of that story is the evidence of the grisly, demise of those hikers. And so it's hard to say, but I do want to see one. I want to see one from a distance.
I think that's an awesome answer and a very honest one. And I've said it a lot of times. There's certain things that should be on the no list and the I don't think that'd be very smart list. And, you know, you're just coming at this from a very analytical perspective and saying, I'm literally wrapped in a cocoon and this thing is standing over me. And you already admitted you're a very heavy sleeper. I mean, you didn't even hear the siren sound and stuff after you finally fell asleep. So
correct.
For you to wake up to that, it was definitely a loud sound and a jarring sound. So, yeah, for you to admit that, I'm going to pass on it being that close and me seeing it, I totally understand that.
Good. I appreciate it because I'm telling you, being, again, this comes from years of being, you know, doing police work, just being thorough and trying to, you know, not only the investigative part of it, but knowing how to plan out and a reasonable approach that keeps everybody safe without causing any, you know, any harm or any foul.
Right.
And that takes a little bit of forethought. And so in every experience I'm involved in, you know, in the fields I've chosen to do, I try to plan out in my head potential outcomes. And I always err on the side of caution so that I don't create maximum carnage.
I think all of you made the right decision that night, because you know I think that is one of the more interesting things is that is it just one Bigfoot or is it this guy and his homies that are, you know, in the woods and you just can't see them because they're masters at what they do? So we don't know, and one would be enough, believe me, especially like you said, if it's standing right the heck over your setup there. It would be interesting to know where exactly it touched the tarp. Like that's the kind of little details that fascinate me. Was it just standing there and goes bonk, like up near the top? Because we're assuming he's tall. Like how high was the tarp slung?
Well, because of the weather that we had the previous couple of days, I hung my tarp low to make sure in case it rained that night, that no rain would get in. So the way my particular tarp was set up, and again, I remember this tarp, I mentioned how much my backpack and my tent cost, but this tarp I spent $400 on. And it's both. The reason why I spend so much money on this stuff is because it's made of Dyneema, which is one of the most lightest, strongest fabrics known to man. So I spend money on these things because I do a lot of hiking. I want to carry the least weight with the most protection I can. This tarp I hung as close to my hammock as I could. So I am roughly 3 foot off the ground at my head, kind of in banana shape with my head and my feet elevated, my torso, you know, closest to the ground, I would say probably about a foot off the ground. So my tarp would be right above my head and my feet, horizontal in the trees. So I would say it was probably about 3.5, 4 foot at the most. Mm. With doors on the ends, because I this particular tarp has doors on the ends where I can pull it in and I bungee cord it, strap it in so that the sides are closed off. So the only thing really I can see is the grass, the earth underneath me. Both ends are tied off and shut, and both I got, you know, the A-shaped frame over the top of me. The slap came. It was on as I was laying down. My head was. Well, I'll say my feet was pointing towards my friend. So if I would have looked left at an angle, I could have, if my tarp was open and I was looking out, I could have seen my wife's. So it would have been on my left side between my wife's tent and where my hammock was hanging. So on the north side of my tent is where the slap happened.
Mm. Don't you just wish it had accidentally dipped its fingers in some perfectly placed white powder and just left some fingerprints if you know, if it was the front of the hand, or I wonder if it's the front of the hand or the back of the hand. That's just the random stuff I think about. But
well, I thought of going back with, cause I got a trail cam. I used to be an avid hunter. I've got out of that and taken up other hobbies, but I have a trail cam. I thought about going back, and I don't know that we could recreate, you know, the incidents that night, but to hang up a trail cam and hope that it happened and maybe capture some video footage.
You never know. It's all about going fishing, right? Random question. What did you guys cook that night?
We had, let's see what it was here. We have, I don't know if this is an Appalachian Trail term, so you might not have heard about it, called ramen bomb. Basically, you take some powdered mashed potatoes, dehydrated mashed potatoes, a package of ramen noodles, and you boil up some water. You break the ramen noodles up in little pieces and you put them in a freezer bag and you pour the mashed potato mix and the seasoning from the ramen noodles into the freezer bag, because when you pour the boiling hot water into it, it doesn't melt because it's a freezer bag. You seal it shut, you place it in a koozie and you let it cook. It sits there and soaks for about 10, 15 minutes and you mix it up. Oh man, that's what we had.
It was delicious. And obviously the idea is that's all light to pack in, right? So
everything's dehydrated. It's super light and it's extremely heavy food. It's full of not just calories, but carbohydrates, right, which you need.
What did you call it?
After a good hike. Ramen bomb.
Ramen bomb. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Like B-O-M-B. We make it at home, it's so good.
Right. You just, you need to create your own Hogan brand of ramen bomb.
I don't know what I would name it. Hogan bomb, maybe?
Yeah. A biggie bomb, because obviously the biggie wanted some bombs that evening. What about other, have you looked up that area as far as other sightings, anything close?
Yes, there was actually one other sighting. I want to say, because when I came back, I sat on this for a couple of days and I told one person that I trust, and he's similar to me. He's not necessarily a critic. He believes, but has never had an experience himself. He said, man, you need to report that to BFRO. I said, you think? He said, yeah, why not? So I went to BFRO and I started researching, you know, and I saw that there was in Jackson County in the 90s, there was one other incident. There was a man fishing. He had hooked a snake. I can't remember what kind of snake he caught, but he had hooked a snake when he was fishing. He pulled it in. And he picked up a rock because he didn't want to reach down and grab the snake and, you know, and hook him and all this other stuff. So he picked up a rock and he smashed it on the snake. And when he did that, a huge splash occurred in front of him at his 1 or 2 o'clock in the lake, close to him, like close to the bank where he was at. He turned around to see what had thrown what. And he was on the downside on the other side of a bank, if you will. So he was down next to this lake, and there was a bank up behind him. And then he looked over his shoulder, and he saw the shoulders and the head. And he said it was a Sasquatch, and it had reddish brown colored hair. And it growled at him, and he took up and left, like he ran. And when he got far enough away, he didn't look back for some time. When he got far enough away, he felt like wasn't being pursued. He looked over his shoulders to see if, in fact, he was or was not being pursued, and the creature was gone.
That's interesting about it. I mean, after he killed the snake, the Sasquatch had a problem with him.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Interesting.
So that's at BFRO.net. You can search by region. On like when you pull up the .net on the left side, there's a little link there to search by region. And you can see on there, you go to a particular county in Illinois, Jackson County. And there's, to my knowledge, what I can remember, that was the only other sighting at Giant City. There's other in the area, definitely others in the area. But at Giant City State Park, where he's at, there's been two sightings. Well, one physical sighting and one Class B, which is what they classified our experience was.
That's right. And if anybody wants to go check that out, as Doug said, BFRO.net, and just go by county, Jackson County, and his is report number 66182. I do find it, at the very least, entertaining and kind of funny that you had this Class B encounter at a place called Giant City State Park.
I didn't think of that.
I really like that.
I didn't even think of that.
I mean, of course, I was, while you were mentioning that, I was looking up some photos of Giant City, and I can see why it's called Giant City, and it's probably not because of Bigfoot, unfortunately, but because of these massive walls of rocks, and what a gorgeous place. But yeah, I just thought that was kind of cool. Giant City, and you have a Class B encounter. Well, Doug, anything else that we should add to this encounter before we move to the Patreon side of this chat for your uncle's Class A sighting?
No, nothing really stands out. I mean, I told you everything I could in great detail. I wish there would have been more. I wish maybe a scent or a footprint or something like that, something I could tie, you know, in would make it that much more believable for me personally. The information I share, you know, it's for people to determine, do their own homework. I mean, there's critics, there's believers, there's people, you know, whatever, it's fine. I didn't see, so I don't know, but my experience was real the way I had it. And I cannot deny for a second that I had some kind of experience I just cannot explain.
Well, and before we switch over to the Patreon side, I just wanted to say again how incredible your work is for us for BTF. We have so many authors that are they're very happy with their covers, as well they should be. And of course, for my two books that have come out so far with Jeff. So thank you so much for all your hard work on that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm actually I took up designing graphic design back in like 2005 when I was given a gift copy of Photoshop, and I taught myself. So I did that on my own. I learned a hypertext markup language, HTML on my own, how to build websites. But I stuck with graphic design. I enjoy doing it. I love pleasing people, make people happy. So it's something that you can put out there and, you know, actually put your thumbprint or your footprint on the world, if you will, something that won't go away anytime soon. I enjoy that kind of a thing.
Yeah, you better not go anywhere. We need you. We want you on board. Yeah, and by the way, of course, I tried my hand at the old Photoshop, and I'll just say that you are a much more patient person than I. I think I lost little patches of hair in the back. I was just like, oh. Yeah, I said a few expletives when I was trying to teach myself the Photoshop, and I finally just, I kind of did. I tossed in the towel with a few things, even just trying to create banners or something. And you just do something and it seems like you just imploded your entire project somehow. And you're like, that's not what I wanted to do. And before I let you go, make sure that you plug where everybody can find you and your books.
All right. So you can find me at www.amazon.com. That is my author page on Amazon. Let me see. You can find me at ldouglashogan.com, where I try to keep my website address updated with my books. Again, I write post-apocalyptic fiction. I write some opinionated nonfiction stuff. I'm working on a couple fiction projects right now, but like Shannon was saying, I also most of my time is taken up with, when I'm not working at the maximum security environment, cover designing, because I find great joy helping other people besides. But if you want to join me, if you're on Instagram, you can hit me up at L. Douglas Hogan also. But on that, you're not going to find very much except some of my hiking pictures. I like to go out hiking a lot and taking pictures and post those online. And some of my cover designs, which probably pretty soon I'll be creating a separate, we'll say a separate Instagram account for my my photo editing and graphic design work.
I think you should. I mean, we're starting to crank out even more stuff now. So you're going to probably get pretty busy.
Well, I've been operating as doing business as Disgruntled Dystopian Publications for a little bit on Amazon. I haven't filed officially locally, but when I do, it's definitely going to be that. And I'm actually using the platform that you guys are giving me to build my portfolio. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that takes off. And I wish you guys nothing but success, because my success depends on your success also. So cheers.
Hey, the same goes for you, though. We
right.
need
this
you as part of this, too. Absolutely. You know, your style, that's obviously the style that we like and that the authors are totally in love with. Everybody's very happy all the way around. So, no, huge high five, and thanks for being a part. Let's dig into this this classy sighting of your uncles.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little bio. The Buddhist says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is, because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes. Consulting our memories. But then there's a real evil, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. Past doesn't exist. The future present. That's the only real you that there is. The Zen master Dogen lived in this place and said, spring does not become summer. First there is summer, and then there is spring.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.